In the name of the living God, creating, redeeming, and sustaining.
Amen. That's nice.
Yeah. Well, there are these two guys sitting together in a bar in a remote Alaskan wilderness. One of the guys is religious. The other is an atheist. And the two are arguing about the existence of God with that special intensity that comes only after the fourth beer. And the atheist says, look, it's not like I have an actual reasons for not believing in God. It's not like I've ever experimented with the whole God and prayer thing. Just last month, I got caught away from the camp in that terrible blizzard. I was totally lost, couldn't see a thing. It was 50 below, and so I tried it. I fell to my knees in the snow and cried out, oh God, if there is a God, I'm lost in this blizzard. I'm going to die if you don't help me. And now in the bar, the religious guy looks at the atheist all puzzled. Well, then you must believe now. He says, after all, here you are, alive. The atheist just rolls his eyes. No, man, that was just a couple Eskimos who happened to be wandering by and showed me the way back to the camp. How do you perceive reality? Clearly, these two guys in the wilderness had two different ways of seeing. Imagine that night on which Jesus gathered his disciples. That's where we are in the gospel today. And it was just before Peter denied him, before Judas betrayed him, and Jesus knew. He knew that Peter was weak and couldn't withstand the pressure of the authorities. He knew that Judas was always missing the point and was only thinking about himself with those 30 pieces of silver. And Jesus could have fixated on all the disciples were already getting wrong all along the way. And about this. But Jesus knew the exact same experience can have totally different sets of meaning to different people seeing the world in different ways. We often look at Peter and Judas and are repulsed by their actions. But they're just responding to how the reality was impacting them. If Peter says he believes in Jesus, he would be the one to be arrested and tried. And oh, that little bit of treasure, it enticed Judas. And I'm confident all he could see is that how it would benefit him instead of seeing the forest for the trees. Peter and Judas were simply looking at the world and seeing how it would impact them. The reality is there's always a temptation for you and for me to think we are the absolute center of the universe too. And we are accustomed to these lofty examples in the gospel, but what about your past week? Your past trip to the grocery store, your commute, or your visit to the doctor's office? When you thought, why don't they understand how this is impacting me? I know I had an absolutely center of the universe experience on Monday. It was one of those, when anything that could go wrong did go wrong, on top of that, I got a paper cut kind of day. And I was very much in my head and very concerned about my immediate, urgent, and real experiences, and I was frustrated and tired and angry. And as I was all up in my head, I was getting into my car to drive over here to EFM, the Education for Ministry class, I heard this guy hollering down the street. And nearby were my kids, hearing all this terrible language and behavior. He was yelling at these other kids that looked like they were in his care. And so I bounded out of my car and I said, hey, you yelling like that scares people. And I yelled, and it was worse than what I just yelled. Minus the expletives. Just like him. And my reaction, if you really traced it back, was back to being all about me and my experience of that day. And if I'm honest, that can be a natural default setting. Defaulting to my experience, my fatigue, my desire for how I want the world to be. And when I live like that, it seems like there are just so many people in my way. And who are these people in my way? Look how rude and annoying and wrong they all are. And how deeply and personally unfair life is. My experience and guess is that everyone here has had a similar experience. Where was it for you? Was it on a terrible, rotten day? Or just on a wait on one of those mind-numbing calls with insurance? Or in a miserable commute where no one seems to know how to drive? Or just a random moment when nobody expected that you were going to respond out of your center of the universe self? I wonder if Jesus ever had a moment where he felt like yelling in all his humanness as he faced the fate of the cross. Now talk about life being deeply and personally unfair. But instead of losing his cool, instead of chastising his friends who he knew would do him in, instead of, perhaps rightly to our minds, making it all about him, the Son of God, Jesus focused on relationship, focused on them, not himself. Jesus promises that we are not alone in our frustrations, models what it looks like to see life from a different perspective, from the perspective of relationship. If you love me, you will keep my commandments, Jesus says in his final conversation before the cross. The commandments to which he's referring, love God, love neighbor, which implies get out of your own head. See beyond your own nose. Which gets us back to the guys in the Alaskan wilderness. How do you perceive your reality? David Foster Wallace said in his celebrated speech to the graduating class of 2005 at Kenyon College, true freedom is being conscious and aware enough to choose what you pay attention to, and to choose how you construct meaning from experience. Because if you cannot exercise this kind of choice in adult life, you will be totally hosed, end quote. The reality is there are many different ways to look at the same situation. As I processed my screaming at the man who was screaming at his kids, I talked about it with my neighbors. One household near to ours said they'd only heard the man carrying on. They didn't hear me, but when they heard him, they looked out the window and they had compassion on him because he turned out to be only a young adult. And they wondered who'd yelled at him first that way. And I wondered if he felt pressure to take care of all these little kids later on. Maybe mom and dad weren't around. And then I wondered if maybe he'd had the same kind of day I'd had. And perhaps it was fueled by something much more trying than my experience. And finally, with the help of my relationships with my neighbors and my husband and others, I was able to perceive something other than my own reality. And the good news of what Jesus is teaching us today is the hard work of love. And love means getting beyond ourselves and being able to see the rest of the world. And that is really hard, really holy work that requires more than just relying on ourselves and our perceptions of reality. And that's why Jesus gave his last words around a table. That's why we gather around that same table week after week. because we can't do this alone, and because we need help directing ourselves toward true worship, toward an understanding of God who is so intent on a world filled with true meaning and freedom and life that he was willing to show us how to achieve that by coming into the world to advocate for us and by returning to the world to advocate for us. And even as he faced his own death, he promised he would never leave. As David Foster Wallace writes, in the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is no such thing as not worship. Everybody worships. The only choice is what we get to worship. The temptations are all around us, and when we worship wealth and power, we'll never have enough. And when we worship beauty and allure, we'll die a million deaths before we actually die. And when we worship our versions of reality, we will become entrenched and narrow and bitter. And this is a longer quote from Wallace. He says, and the so-called real world will discourage you from operating on your default settings, will not discourage you from operating on your default settings, because the so-called real world of men and money and power hums merrily along in a pool of fear and anger and frustration and craving and worship of self. Our own present culture has harnessed these forces in ways that have yielded extraordinary wealth and comfort and personal freedom. The freedom to all be lords of our tiny skull-sized kingdoms. This freedom has much to recommend it. But of course, there are all different kinds of freedom. And the kind that is most precious, you will not hear much talk about in the great outside world of wanting and achieving. The really important kind of freedom involves attention and awareness and discipline and being able to truly care about people and to sacrifice for them over and over in myriad, petty, unsexy ways every day. End quote. And this is the worship to which we are called. A daily return to the challenge of a God of relationship, who's ever at the ready to reveal a new perspective, and not just to be present with us, but to abide with us, even when we've lost our minds or are stuck in our minds. There is so much to see and so much to worship, and Jesus says, in a little while, the world will no longer see me. And how easy it is to stop there and live in a world where we can't see. And that's why we come back here for worship, continually practicing getting the perspective of Jesus, who in the face of death and everything wrong about the world could see and speak only love, who promises, in a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. Amen.